Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're tackling a compound that's generating a lot of conversation in health and fitness circles. MK-6707, you probably know it as ibutamorin.
Yeah, it's definitely out there. You hear it mentioned on, big platforms like Joe Rogan, maybe in discussions related to Huberman Lab's focus on science, and for sure, deep in the fitness community.
Absolutely. But look, before we even start, we need to be incredibly clear about something.
Please, yes, go ahead.
This is critical. MK-677 is a research chemical. Full stop.
Right. It is not approved for people to take, not by the FDA, not by anyone. Its intended use is strictly within controlled lab research.
Exactly. So this deep dive, it's purely for information. We're looking at the preclinical data, some early human trial stuff from the sources provided, just to understand the science. We're absolutely not suggesting anyone use it.
Couldn't agree more. That disclaimer is paramount. Our goal here is to sift through the anecdotes and the online chatter.
Yeah, cut through the noise.
And actually look at the research these sources point to. What is this stuff scientifically?
Yeah.
How does it supposedly work? What did early studies actually find? Let's get into that material.
Okay, so MK-677. At its core, what are scientists actually describing?
Okay, so technically it's called a non-peptidic, orally active growth hormone secretagogue,
Yeah.
or GHS for short.
Right, GHS, growth hormone secretagogue.
Okay, let's break that down. What's it actually doing in the body?
Well, think about your body's natural hormone signaling. You have hormones that act like messengers. One is ghrelin. People often call it the hunger hormone, but it does more than that. Ghrelin binds to receptors, including in your pituitary gland, and tells it basically release growth hormone, GH.
Okay.
Now, MK-677 is designed to mimic ghrelin. It fits into those same ghrelin receptors on the pituitary.
Ah, so it's like a key fitting into the same lock.
Pretty much. It activates the receptor, sending that same signal, release more growth hormone.
Okay, so crucially, it's not giving you synthetic growth hormone from the outside. It's stimulating your own body's system. Exactly right. It triggers the endogenous pathway, your internal system, to produce and release pulses of GH.
And more GH usually means what follows?
Well, typically, higher GH levels lead to the liver producing more insulin-like growth factor 1, or IGF-1.
And GH and IGF-1 are the big players in the show.
Huh?
Well, why do people care about them?
They're fundamental for lots of processes, cell growth, regeneration. That translates to things like building muscle, repairing tissues, bone health, even how your body uses nutrients metabolism.
Right, so anything affecting GH and IGF-1 naturally gets a lot of attention.
Definitely. Especially if it claims to do it via a natural pathway.
Okay, makes sense. It's designed to boost these key hormones by acting like a natural signal. So let's pivot to what the research, the actual data in our sources started showing. Where did the investigations focus first?
Well, a huge area, and probably the main driver of all the buzz, is body composition, muscle and bone specifically.
Muscle gain. That's got to be top of the list for why it's so talked about. What did the studies find there?
So one of the key sources we looked at mentions a specific study, a randomized controlled trial in healthy older adults. It was published, I believe, in the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism.
Okay, older adults. What do they find?
They gave them MK-677 daily for a full year, and they saw, as expected, significant increases in both GH and IGF-1 levels. But importantly, this correlated with an increase in fat-free mass.
Fat-free mass. So essentially, muscle and other non-fat tissue over a year. That sounds pretty noticeable.
It was reported as a statistically significant increase, yes. But, and this is important, the source material, particularly from Operation Supplement Safety, also points out that in that same study, participants reported side effects.
Okay. Like what?
Things like increased appetite, which makes sense given the ghrelin mimicry and some mild swelling, edema in the lower legs.
Right. So even in a study showing a positive outcome on muscle mass, there were other effects happening simultaneously. That's a really key detail.
Absolutely critical. You can't just look at the potential upside. What about bone? You mentioned GH and IGF-1 affect bone metabolism too.
Yeah, exactly. Does the research touch on that?
It does. Our sources indicate that studies have looked into MK-677's effect on bone turnover, the process of breaking down old bone and building new bone. Specifically, they looked at markers of bone formation, so signs of bone building activity. One source mentions research, again in the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism, looking at these markers, sometimes even alongside other treatments like alendronate, which is a known bone drug.
And did it show an effect?
The findings suggested it could increase those markers associated with building bone.
Huh. So potential impacts on both muscle and bone structure. It's not just a single target kind of thing.
Seems not. And the research didn't stop there. It also branched out into looking at metabolism and, maybe more surprisingly, some very preliminary investigations into, well, cognitive function.
Okay, metabolism first. That older adult study you mentioned, the one showing increased fat-free mass, did it look at things like blood sugar? Insulin.
It did. And this is where that complex picture really comes into focus.
Uh-oh.
Well, while they reported the increase in fat-free mass, that same study also noted some less desirable metabolic changes in the group taking MK-677.
Like what, specifically?
Specifically, increases in fasting blood glucose levels, and alongside that, a decrease in insulin sensitivity.
Oh, okay. So more muscle mass, potentially, but also higher blood sugar, and the body becoming less responsive to insulin, that seems significant, like a major trade-off.
It's a really crucial finding reported in the source data. And as places like Operation Supplement Safety emphasize, you have to consider the complete findings, not just the parts that sound good. These metabolic shifts are serious points, especially depending on someone's underlying health.
Absolutely. That context gets lost easily in just casual chat about it.
Yeah.
But what about the cognitive angle? That seems like a leap from growth hormone.
Yeah, it feels different, but it ties back to MK-677 being a ghrelin mimetic. It acts like ghrelin.
And ghrelin receptors are. Where else besides the pituitary?
They're also found in parts of the brain. Some of these areas are involved in things like learning, memory, and overall neuronal health.
So wait, the research isn't saying MK-677 boosts cognition in healthy people, is it? It sounds more like exploring ghrelin's basic role in the brain.
Exactly that. It's much more preliminary. We're talking preclinical studies, often in animal models, looking at the potential influence of compounds that activate ghrelin receptors, ghrelin agonists like MK-677 on brain health, especially in models of neurodegenerative conditions.
Okay, give me an example.
One source mentioned an MDPI study using MK-0677, which is just another code for MK-677, in a specific mouse model used for Alzheimer's research, the 5XFAD mouse. They were exploring if activating this pathway could maybe affect some of the Alzheimer's-like pathology in those mice.
Right, so highly experimental, animal model, specific disease context, miles away from human cognitive enhancement.
A million miles, yes. But it shows the scope of research trying to understand the ghrelin system. It highlights that these biological pathways it interacts with are complicated and might influence way more than just muscle growth.
Okay.
And it's these kinds of intriguing, maybe unexpected findings in early research across different systems that really capture the imagination, you know? It fuels those broader, sometimes speculative discussions about optimization and biohacking.
That makes total sense. You hear muscle, bone, metabolism, maybe even brain pathways.
Yeah.
It sounds like a potential wonder compound. Which brings us back to the why. Why all the buzz we started with? What's the core appeal?
It really taps into some powerful desires, doesn't it? Building more muscle, recovering faster from workouts, maybe getting better sleep.
Yeah, GH is linked to sleep quality, right?
It is. And then there's the whole anti-aging angle, however vaguely defined. It speaks directly to that drive for self-improvement, for optimization that's just huge right now, especially in fitness and performance circles. People hear growth hormone, IGF-1, and they think youth, vitality, progress.
And that's the dangerous leap, isn't it? From intriguing early data in labs to thinking, maybe I should try this? How big is that gap, really?
It's enormous, and the sources we've reviewed are incredibly clear about this. Preclinical results, findings from small, early human trials, even in healthy groups like those older adults, that's just step one.
So stretching the surface.
Barely. It absolutely does not mean the compound is safe or effective for widespread use outside of a controlled research setting. We simply do not have established long-term safety data for MK-677 in humans.
And sources like Operation Supplement Safety actually call out specific concerns, don't they? Beyond just the unknown.
They do. They point to potential risks that have surfaced. Concerns about increased risk of congestive heart failure, particularly in certain already vulnerable patient groups. And maybe most importantly, just the huge question mark over long-term effects on cardiovascular system, on hormone balance. We just don't know.
Unknown long-term effects. That's the elephant in the room when you're talking about putting something in your body regularly.
It really is. And it just circles back to why that initial disclaimer is non-negotiable. MK-677 is an unapproved research chemical, period.
So while discussions on big podcasts might spark curiosity, and resources that break down the science can be helpful for understanding the literature.
Like some of the Huberman Lab-style deep dives might do.
Right. Navigating that space between, oh, interesting research, and should I take this unapproved substance, requires serious critical thinking.
It means looking past the hype, past the forum anecdotes, and demanding the actual data. And crucially, understanding the limitations of that data and acknowledging what we don't know.
Which is a lot.
A huge amount. And it means realizing the only safe and responsible path is always, always talking to a qualified healthcare professional before even thinking about trying any new compound like this, not relying on influencers or online chatter.
Okay, so let's try and pull the main threads together from this deep dive on MK677. We've established it's this non-peptide thing, a secret dog.
Right, that mimics ghrelin to prompt your body to release more of its own GH and then IGF-1.
And the research sources we discussed point to some early findings, like that observed increase in fat-free mass in healthy older adults from that one specific study.
And also those hints about increasing markers of bone formation mentioned in relation to studies in journals like JCE.
And this is a big but.
Yeah.
Those same sources show the other side of the coin. Like the increased fasting blood glucose and the decreased insulin sensitivity seen in that same older adult study.
Exactly. And while there's some, you know, intriguing but very early stage preclinical work on ghrelin agonists in animal models for things like Alzheimer's.
That's worlds away from saying anything about human cognition right now.
Absolutely. And the massive popular interest, clearly driven by the potential upsides linked to GH and IGF-1, muscle recovery, sleep, maybe anti-aging hopes.
But the science, the actual sources, ground us with those critical warnings. Early data isn't proof for humans. Long-term safety is a huge unknown. And specific risks like cardiovascular concerns have been flagged by safety resources.
And fundamentally, it remains unapproved for human use. So approaching it means skepticism, looking at the data carefully, understanding the limits, and prioritizing safety over potential unproven benefits.
No question. And talking to your doctor is absolutely essential. So maybe this leaves you, the listener, with a final thought to chew on. You've got these potentially exciting signals from early research on one hand, but on the other, these really significant unknowns about long-term safety and real-world human effects. How do you navigate that? When the popular buzz seems to outrun the scientific certainty, what does it actually mean to be well-informed about a compound like MK677, knowing the full story might not be written for years or even decades?